intro.
Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go, Rachel and Michael.
Let's get love in a better place. Pick up the world, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. Jay Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when live and on the air.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, everybody. This is Fran Lewis. I'm your host, and this is MJ Network. MJ stands for Marcia Joyce, that was my sister. And that was Rachel and Michael from Trinity House Entertainment.inc. And guess what? They will be here on Monday with their new song, Lord, I Love You, and their inspirational music. But for right now, we've got a phenomenal author. We've got the author of Caught Up In It, the Blue Caraway series, David Burnworth. So here, let me give you some fun so that you're going to want to read it. The ending leaves us wondering what is next for Blue, whether Chrome will remain as his pawn, and how they will each deal with the fact that the body count rises. And the end result for this reviewer, and I hope others as well, Blue, Tess, Harmony, Chrome, Pelton, Tarsi, Hope, and Murda, my favorite character, the horses, that you once start reading this outstanding, suspense-filled, explosive novel, guess what? You can't help but get caught up in it, and that's the title of the book. Hi, David. I'm so glad you're here, and are you ready?
I am. Thank you so much for having me.
I am excited, and that's the last paragraph of my book review. That's how I ended it. And everybody's reading it. I got a whole bunch of comments this morning about people wanting to read it. So that's great. The minute I posted on Just Reviews, I got a million people, which is great. So tell us a little bit about Blue and his investigative agency and who are the main players in that work with him, because I love them all.
So Blue Caraway fought in the Gulf War, and afterwards he became an Army Ranger. And when he got out of the Rangers, he hung his own PI shingle. This is in about the late 90s. And he tends to get the rougher jobs. Somebody's kidnapped, his first job, or one of his first jobs was a kidnapping in Mexico, and he and his partner had to go down and get the person who was kidnapped. But he also does private security, and he also has a family or a daughter that is 21 and he's still involved, or she's involved in his life. And he's got this business partner named Mick Chrome, who was a buddy of his in the Rangers and the Gulf War. And the thing about Mick is he's a functioning addict. And so he tries to work, but at the same time, he's got his demons that he deals with. In addition to Mick Chrome, two major players in the book are Tess Ray and Harmony Childs, who you mentioned. They're investigative journalists who are, as the media goes, more social media and less publication, I guess you could call it. They're finding different ways of continuing in their careers. And they've partnered with Blue Caraway Investigations to help the guys where they can. And I just love the chemistry between all the characters. It makes for a lot of fun writing the book.
You did. I love these characters. They're so cool. So when I have my next show, Strong Female Characters, I'll make sure it's on a date when you could do it. Seriously, because you got the best ones. I love them, especially Harmony. She takes no prisoners. She's just so like me. So we meet Ariel C. Why is she in danger, and why is she there so in awe of her? I would be in awe of her, too.
So the book's Caught Up In It starts out. Blue Caraway, he's on a job overseas, a private security job, and he's just handed off. He's just basically tucked his client in for the night, and he's at this private bar just kind of relaxing for a minute, and in walks Ariel, who's a mega pop star, and he realizes that she's alone, and that's probably not the safest place for her to be alone, and right as he's recognizing this or realizing this, men come in and try to kill her. And so Blue, who is exhausted, he's been up for 20 hours, but his job mode kicks back in, and he's really got to choose between saving Ariel or saving the bartender, and he chooses to save the female. And this is exactly the situation where Blue Caraway excels. And so Ariel becomes grateful for him saving her. And that's kind of where the story kicks off.
Yeah, it did, and it's really good. Because I could use it for fans like him, too, let me tell you. No wonder. So her security detail screws up, protecting her. So he creates a better safety net for her. Why did her security net, I mean, that shouldn't have happened at all.
Yeah, they dropped the ball, and without giving too much away in the book, it was intentional. The reader finds out it's an intentional, and Ariel realizes that she's in danger. And so because Blue already saved her once, she pursues Blue to become her private security detail. But it's not the danger she was in Kuala Lumpur, which was where they initially met. She's still in that danger. She's still got a contract out on her. So Blue... She ends up in Charleston, South Carolina, which is Blue's home turf and one of my favorite cities in the world. And it gives him sort of the home court advantage to be able to protect her.
So we've got Tess and Harmony, who I love. They're so cool. And basically they're not really they're part of this, but they really do something else. So tell us about Tess and Harmony and the fact that his daughter Hope really hopes that Tess winds up part of the family, which is rare for a daughter to want anybody to wind up with anybody's father ever.
Yes, so Tess and Harmony, you meet them in the first book in the series, In It for the Money. Blue ends up with a missing persons case. And them being aggressive, hungry reporters, they smell a story in this case, because it's a high society socialite son that's missing, and Blue gets involved in trying to track this kid down, and so they meet in the first book, and it's just so much fun to write them and Blue, because there's so much chemistry among the group. And you're right, because right now this is the third book. Caught Up in It is the third book of the series, and Blue and Tess are now dating, and Tess is about 20 years younger than Blue, almost like 5 or 6 years older than Blue's daughter. But you're right, the fact that Hope, who is his daughter, likes Tess, and she recognizes that she's good for her father, and so she really wants what's best for her father. So that's, luckily it's working out so far.
Well, so far, until you decide otherwise, right? We know. You're the one, right?
Well, the characters tell me is really how it happens.
Yeah. So my favorite character in the book is Murda. Seriously, I love that horse. So tell us about Murda and why he plays an important role in this novel and how that shows the other side of Blue. Because I was crying when he got hurt. Seriously. I got really upset when he wasn't well.
So Blue Caraway lives in Charleston, South Carolina, south of the city, and is going back two generations. His family has an island, a small 9-acre island, depending on the tide. It could be 7 acres or 9 acres, depending on if the tide's in or not. And on this island is a small herd of Carolina marsh tacky horses, which is an endangered species, but it's native to the Carolinas. Mostly the low country. And this herd has been there for as long as Blue's family has lived on the island. And Murder is a black stallion. He's the leader of the herd. And he comes down, and in this book, he's coming down with an ailment called colic.
No.
And while the horse, Blue's used to the horses running around, and but up until this point, he's just basically tolerated them. And then he realizes, as his horse is down and he's got to help the horse, that he actually, they're family to him. And that kind of changes his view of them. They've always had this relationship where they take care of each other, the horses let him know when somebody comes on the island that's not welcome. And he makes sure that there's food and water for them. But up until this point, it was just sort of a distant relationship. And now he's got to actually care for Murder. And so you see another side of Murder who's normally doesn't want anything to do with anybody, and you see another side of Blue and how they interact.
I love Murder. I could use him. Seriously, I think a lot of people could use a friend like that. I often wonder sometimes. He's got this instinct to know when there's trouble. That's good. So we've got two more people that are chosen to keep Ariel safe, and that's Brock and his wife. Why are they included? And how many different locations were needed to protect this lady? I mean, really. She's lucky that she's got all these people on her side. Most people don't.
Yeah. Well, money helps, of course.
Yeah, it does.
Brack, yeah. Brack Pelton is, I write two series, the Blue Caraway series, which is the book that we're discussing today, is in that series. I write another series, the Brack Pelton series. Those are my first three books. Mm. And Brack Pelton is an amateur sleuth who happens to own a beach bar in Charleston. And the first time that Brack and Blue meet, Blue's on the job, and he ends up in Brack's bar, and there's a shootout with some other people. And so that's how Brack and Blue get teamed up. And so from that point on, Brack is, he was a Marine in Afghanistan for a while, and so he's got a little bit of post-traumatic stress disorder, and he kind of likes violence. And so he realizes that he solved a few missing persons jobs on his own, but he's not a PI, and he recognizes in Blue that he has the opportunity to feed his somewhat addiction to violence. So he stays in around Blue's agency, and Blue and his business partner Chrome kind of use Brack's bar as a home base. And Brack's wife is a Charleston socialite, very well from a very wealthy family, and so she knows a lot about what's going on in the city. And so through her knowledge, she helps both Brack and she helps Blue Caraway investigations with basically information. She gives them a heads up on things, and if things are about to go south, she sometimes has the information ahead of time. And so as you mentioned, there are several locations. So there's Charleston, and in Charleston alone, Ariel is, she stayed at Blue's house, she stayed at his business partner Chrome's house, and one of Blue's other clients is a wealthy family, the name of Kincaid, and when things get really bad in Charleston, he moves her onto that, into Kincaid's house, because it's more like an armed compound, a guarded compound, so... And then another place is a church that's very significant through all my books. It's happened to just relocate to North Charleston, but the pastor there is named Brother Thomas. And when all else fails, he seems to be the one that that actually saved the day. Whether he's saving souls or saving somebody's bacon, as long as he's saving somebody, he's where he needs to be.
Well, I was just going through my folders over here on my Just Reviews, and I realized I did read only one Brack Paxton. I did read Big City Heat. I reviewed that. I wrote In the Money for it, and I wrote A Bad Time to Be in It, and I wrote Caught Up in It. So I know these characters, people. Trust me. So what happens when they go to Malaysia on a quick trip and the body count rises? How does Chrome manage to skirt the law? Well, not really. He gets in trouble, but seriously. But everybody wants him around. I want him around, too, because he's dangerous, and he still solves it. So how does he manage to go to Malaysia and get in trouble and then try to get out of it? Because that's hard.
So Chrome's an interesting character.
I love him. He's great.
Blue's partner. Blue is the more rational side of the business, and he's got the business front, although his daughter has actually got more business sense than he does. Chrome is the one that is sort of like the heavy. And without giving too much away, when Chrome takes a trip to Malaysia, sort of at the end of the book, and it's basically on a revenge trip. Something bad happened to Blue Caraway when he was in Malaysia, and Chrome, a trusted friend, set Blue up when he was over there, and he barely got out of the country alive. And so after things settled down, Chrome goes back and to write what he thinks are a few wrongs. And he just times it so that he gets in and then he gets out in the shortest amount of time that he can there. But they tend to skirt the law at times in the books.
Mm-hmm.
But that's part
that's
of the fun of writing
that.
The books.
That's what the most fun is, I know, because I'd love to be able to do something like that too. So Harmony and Mick take a trip to California. She connects with her ex-boyfriend. Don't do that, people. Once you're done, you're done. Trust me. I know these things from lasting experience from a long time ago. Once you're done, you're done. So at this point, she turns the true meaning of lives in deception. What did they do to teach him a lesson? And I'm glad she did, because you don't connect with an old boyfriend, and you can trust this guy. Oh, my God. Why did she do that? But what did she think she was going to do?
So, normally, Harmony is a very strong, independent woman.
Yeah.
And she knows how to handle herself. But in this particular trip, it was somebody who she had a history with, and she kind of gets swept off her feet. The person that she thought this person was a little different, but she thought not in a bad way. But so she connects with him again, only to find out that he plays a pivotal role in the story as the reason why Ariel is in trouble. And but she doesn't realize that at the time. And so afterwards, this happens at a time when she is traveling with Chrome to California, and Chrome doesn't – he's there sort of as her protector, but it looks just like a romance kind of thing, but it ends up being – something worse after that. And so Chrome being Chrome feels like he has to take care of things, and Harmony feeling jilted tries to make sure that the person understands that what they did to her was wrong. So unfortunately, what they do isn't enough of a detractor, and you end up seeing this person later on in the book. But I believe by the end of the book, justice was served. So,
I know, and it was really nicely served. You know, sometimes you just need some ideas to serve the justice. Too bad you can't really do them in real life. But there was, seriously, that was really cool. So we have another character that gets involved with Mick, and that's Colette. So why does she become involved in this situation, and who is Sammy? I mean, I liked her too.
So, speaking of exes, Colette is Mick Chrome's ex-girlfriend, who actually he recognized from 20 years ago. He recognized that she was looking for somebody more stable than himself, that he wasn't going to be able to deliver what she wanted in a relationship, and so he ended it. And she felt jilted, of course, because of it. And so when he's in California, she's part of the LAPD. And as a detective, he reconnects with her to try to get some information as for the reason they're in California in the first place. And so it ends up being loosely connected to some cases she's working on. And so she ends up coming to Charleston, taking some time off and coming to Charleston to help Mick Chrome out. And so that's how she gets involved. And of course, Mick's still not ready to settle down, but she's willing to give it another shot. Sammy is another person in private security, and he's actually the head of private security for one of the people that Mick and Blue are looking into. And they know each other from the profession that they're in, and Chrome ends up making Sammy look bad to the point that he wants to get something back over on Chrome. And so he ends up coming to Charleston as well. And unfortunately, things don't end up well for Sammy. But it puts a little spin on the case because there are, I guess the moral is there are repercussions on things that we do, and sometimes when people do bad things to people who maybe deserve it, there is still the chance of some blowback. And so that's what Chrome kind of experiences with the Sammy character.
Sometimes you got to be careful for what you wish for. Seriously, it's scary.
Yeah.
I know. So we've got Kincaid. So how come Ariel is with Blue, but she's not safe there? So and everyone, she has to move there. Why is everyone so starstruck with her? I mean, when Brock's wife finds out that she's going to meet her, she goes crazy. How come they all want to meet her and then they have to hide who she is? Because even when she goes out in public, they have to take a chance because they don't want her to be dead.
Yeah, so I guess it's like any major female pop star that you can think of. When people meet them in person and they're a fan, there is a little bit of the stardom there. And once people get past that with Ariel, they realize that she's a real person and she's got some humility about her. But the fact that she is a world famous pop star, that's their first impression, and that's what they know about her. And so just somebody who's won some Grammys and is very famous, and so that just seems to be their first impression. And you're right, when they move her around, if she's out in public, fortunately, her stage presence and who she is when she's not on stage, there's enough of a difference that people might not recognize her as a pop star if she doesn't have any makeup on and she might have like something covering her hair or something like that. So they're able to move her around as long as they keep her disguise in place. But if she were in her stage presence, then obviously she would probably get trampled with all of her fans. So they have to take a lot of precautions when they're moving her around.
Well, I know how that feels to meet people in person and get like an awe. When I go to the Philly Fest, I go, oh my God, I'm really standing with all these people. But I try not to sound like that. Well, it's hard. It's hard. I mean, I think the very first New York Times author I ever interviewed was Tess Gerrenson. And I was able to contact her on my own. So when I met her 2 years and she walked over and gave me a hug, I was like, oh my God, you know, you get starstruck. Because she's most amazing person on this planet. So I know if I saw someone like Ariel, yeah, probably. Everybody does. So we've got, as a matter of fact, I don't think I met you last year at the Thriller Fest. I met a whole bunch of people. But
yeah, I wasn't there last year. I think one of these years.
Are you going to be there this year? They're stuck with me. They invite me. Kim invites me.
Well, of course.
Kimberly Howe
invites
me every year. She loves me because I do all this lovely stuff without getting paid. It's fun. So tell us about Dorfman. And he's supposed to be Mick's friend. And sometimes the people you keep closer to you, you got to be careful. And what happens with him? You can't, you know, poor Mick, he gets it from all sides in this particular book. So what happens with Dorfman when he realizes, I don't know about you? That bothered me, seriously.
So Dorman is a guy that Mick Chrome used to ride bikes with a long time ago. And so they've known each other for quite a number of years. But unfortunately, when money enters the picture, allegiances kind of change. And you realize that Dorman's loyalty was more to his own financial situation than friendship. And unfortunately, he betrays Mick to this bigger presence that they're fighting. And it's just one of those things where when money enters the picture, it tests loyalty. And in this case, it didn't turn out well for Mick or Dorman.
Yeah, well, money can buy just about anything, including disloyalty, which is scary. So this is an interesting question I've got listening in front of me. Harmony wants to become part of his company. And how come? And how will that create and will it create a problem with Tess and their relationship, because she wants to be hired as part of his company because she likes what he's doing. So is that going to work out or not? I know she works for the media, but she wants to be part of Blue Caraway Investigations, which sounds like a fun thing to do.
Harmony's got some unique skills. Both she and Tess are pretty investigative journalists, and they're local Charleston spokes. They're spokesmodels. They have side gigs where they do some spokesmodel work, and she does like, more so than Tess, she likes the danger aspect of the work that's done. And she, out of the two, she's probably has a stronger presence in the field to do the work that needs to be done. Now, Tess is very confident in who she is and in her relationship with Blue. And in her mind, if Blue wanted to be with Harmony, then he would be with Harmony. But he's not. He's with Tess. And so Tess recognizes that and gives Blue the freedom. And so she doesn't really feel threatened by Harmony because of just who she is and her confidence. She's got confidence in herself and who she is. So I'm not sure if Harmony is going to be a permanent fixture in Blue Caraway Investigations. I'm working on the fourth book in the series now, and I'm having a lot of fun with it. So I'll leave that as a something that's going to get answered in the fourth book as to whether or not Harmony is going to be part of the company or not. But she does bring to the table different attributes that Chrome and Blue don't have. And so she could be an advantageous addition. So we'll just have to see what happens in the next book.
Well, she just has to walk into the room. And that's it.
Yeah.
People just know that she's there. Yeah. I mean, seriously. But the only thing is, you have to promise me you can't kill off Murder. Sorry. Can't kill off the animal. I love the horse.
No, I don't. I love animals. And Brack Pelton's got a dog named Shelby. And Blue's got his horses.
Yeah.
And the animals are safe. So I like putting the animals into the activities a little bit. The horses have actually stop some people from attacking Blue, so I like doing that because it shows a relationship between the animals and the protagonists.
You and David Rosenfeld with the animals, and I interviewed him in February, and there were 17 dogs that were barking in the background. No, I'm really serious. Yeah, they were. And he said, "Don't worry, I'm hiding in the closet," but I could hear them. And I said, "That's their applause telling me I did a great job. I don't care." I said, "You see, at least somebody loves me, even if it is 17 dogs that I didn't know." And they were making noise. It was hilarious. So Blue realizes that the Russians and the Red Army are after him. So how do they try to eliminate him? And what happens when they dare to go after my horses? Seriously.
So the Red Army is a Russian gang in Charleston, and they're one of the suppliers of weapons to the gang trade in Charleston. And so when people come into Charleston in particular to go after Blue and Chrome, Blue gets the information ahead of time that there's going to be a meet for a gun purchase. And so at that time, he and Chrome set up a double cross. But unfortunately, the side effect of that is now the Russians realize that Blue has just double-crossed them, and so now they come after him. And this leads Blue, they chase Blue kind of across the country, and Las Vegas being Las Vegas, there's crime there just like everywhere else in certain aspects. So the Russians have a presence there, and Blue and Chrome were able to eliminate a lot of them in their first hit, but unfortunately they didn't eliminate all of them. And so what happens is they have a few left that are regrouping and coming after him. And so I had a lot of fun in a warped kind of way. I had a lot of fun writing the tension with the Russians, because it wasn't something that Blue thought through enough, and then he had to pay the repercussions of dealing with them on the back end. And so it kind of made for some additional tension in the book that I kind of enjoyed.
I got worried too, yeah. So how did you create the scenes with Harmony and Mick taking care of some of the players that dare to defy them? And I could use them to help me with people that dare to defy me too, seriously. So how do you create those tension scenes? That's hard.
The nice thing is I really like Mick Chrome and Harmony could both probably lead their own series. They're very strong characters in my book, and I have to make sure that they don't take over, as you said, because when Harmony shows up in the room and she's it, now she's the scene. And the same with Mick Chrome in a lot of ways, and so putting them together, I had a lot of fun with that because of the chemistry between them. She's an attractive woman, and Mick is Mick, and so she of course rebuffs him, but he kind of turns into her protector, and when bad things happen to her, he's going to try to rectify that situation. So the characters, you hear some authors say this, and in this particular case, it's true for Harmony and Mick. They write their own scenes. I just kind of show up and type. Mm-hmm. And so those characters, they take over, and I'm along for the ride. And that's what, being an author, that's the best time to be when I'm writing is when that happens, because I can barely get the words down, type them out fast enough. To create what's going on with them.
As long as they stay in this series, I'm a happy girl. No, seriously. Mick is great. I love him. I think he's just so opposite of everybody else that he creates that special dichotomy in the book. And he's like so different that you say, oh my God, if he was, you know what, if he didn't have characters with flaws, I probably would be bored. And if everything went easy, I would like that's not going to happen. That couldn't happen. And lately I've been getting a lot of, oh, my God, why do I read this? And I don't write negative reviews ever. But if a book is incredible, I won't review it. I'll just write a summary or I'll just tell the author I can't review it. And that doesn't happen too often, but lately I don't know. So how does human trafficking come into play and who's involved in that particular part of the book? Because that's an important thing, because that's happening right now and people don't even realize it.
So I learned a little bit about it when I wrote a book that you had mentioned previously called Big City Heat, which is set in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I started learning a little bit about the human trafficking and the trade involved with it, I guess the best way to put it for this book, caught up in it, is it's such an important, huge topic that I barely scratched the surface to do it justice. But what was interesting is just the networking involved, and how you don't realize that it's going on as close to you as it probably is, and you meaning wherever you are is. Wherever you're living. But I have a cousin, Corey, who volunteers for a center that helps with human trafficking victims. And so I did a little research on it, and I'd like to do a little bit more independent work, just getting awareness to this issue. How it plays out in this book is I use it as a way to eliminate some bad guys. They get wrapped up in a police sting of human trafficking, and some of them don't make it. But the reality is, it's a serious issue, I think the more awareness of it, the better I think it is for hopefully resolving it one day.
Let's hope so, because they make an awful lot of money selling children and people, and it's horrible. And people coming here think that they're coming here for safety, and basically they're being sold. But before I forget, Monday, Rachel and Michael, Trinity House Entertainment Inc., will be here with Lord I Love You and the rest of their songs that I love, You're Going to Make It. And I listen to them just to feel better. On the 30th, a story about the Plains Indians, a true story based on research, Jewel Gutman, And George Putnam will be here for Redfish Oak. It's excellent. And on the 4th, somebody we all know and love, Charles Salzberg, Swans Down. And on the 6th, the author of the Confessions of an Innocent Man, David R. Dow. And on the 10th, Gabriel Vajon, The Gaming Naming Game. And on the 12th, someone else we all love, Vincent Zandre, The Caretaker's Wife. On the 17th, this is going to be original. I've never done this before. I'm going to moderate 5 big authors, and the name of the book is Hollywood versus the Authors. It talks about what happens when you send your script to Hollywood, and maybe it's a mistake. So we've got Alan Jacobson, Tess Gerrinson, Stephen J. Smith, Schwartz, Lawrence Block, and Lee Goldberg. Who could ask for better than that? Oh, my God. And on the 19th, we've got R.G. Belsky, Alan Topol, John Land, and Philip Margolin, strong female characters. And that's just part of June. It gets better at the end of the month, too. So, who is Yuri, and how do we know that there are women out there that need to be safe, like we were talking about? So, why does somebody get roped into that, to work for that, something like that? Is it a cost of money to make them feel, you know, better that they have such power over these poor girls? That's scary.
So, Yuri is... He's one of the leaders of the Red Army, the Russian gang, and they're into many things. And in Blue and Chrome, when they initially take on the Russians, Yuri is one of the ones that gets away, and unfortunately he's one of the leaders. And so one of the branches of his business is human trafficking. I guess without getting into too many details about it, they have a network in the Las Vegas area, and they're basically exploiting these people, as you say, and it's people that don't really have a choice. And you think, well, they could just walk away, but they're not able to. It's set up for them that they can't just walk away. And so they're stuck in this business. Blue and Chrome and Harmony recognize through their surveillance that they can inform on these on some of these situations and try to get the law enforcement involved to resolve it. And so in some aspects of the book, that kind of happens. But the people really just don't have a choice.
Well, I have to tell you, your publicist is fantastic. She's tweeting my review. And she's tweeting the show. She's doing everything. So for those of you that haven't caught up in it, when the publicist says read it, you know it's good. You've got to read it. Seriously. And she gave me a big compliment. She said I didn't give anything away. I'm really proud of myself. Because you never know what somebody considers a spoiler. I might consider, oh, well, sorry about that. But I would never do that. So tell us about Jimmy Zolci. And how did they know? I don't like this guy at all. I didn't trust him, being honest. So how did they realize what he really is?
So Jimmy Zolucci is another supplier of weapons in the Charleston area, and he and Blue and Mick know each other from a while back, and it's sort of a love-hate relationship they have going on. They don't really trust each other, but the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing. So in certain aspects, they'll team up if it benefits them. And so by Blue taking out some of the Russians in Charleston, it actually helps Jimmy's business because he's also a supplier of weapons. And so Blue just took out one of his biggest competitors. And so Jimmy feels that maybe Blue's working to his advantage. And luckily, Jimmy's got a brother who's in Las Vegas, and when Blue needs something in Las Vegas, Jimmy's brother helps him out. So Jimmy's kind of involved in a larger mafia network. And so with that, branches extending across the country, it was to Blue's advantage at that particular point, but he knows he can't throw Jimmy. He doesn't trust Jimmy enough to trust him with too much. So
I don't blame him. I don't trust anybody in this book except maybe the horse, seriously, and Tess and Harmony. So how does Blue survive? I mean, I was flabbergasted. He gets in trouble, and they have in trouble, and Mick escapes. Why are they so able to get away with not, I mean, they get arrested and stuff like that, but how do they get away with it? I mean, what kind of power do they have behind them that everybody in the whole world would like to have, too? They seem to be immune to, you know, total prosecution, which is good because otherwise, you know, we wouldn't have them in the book. So how do they get away with it? How did you create that? Because that's interesting. Because a lot of authors just, they just, oh, the character gets arrested and until the lawyer comes and I go like, he's going to get out, so just do it. But this doesn't work that way. It's a little bit more complicated. How come?
So in this day and age, I think there's a lot of video coverage, probably more so than we realize. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when things happen and the camera's rolling and it's a security camera or it's covering an area and it happens in that area, the evidence shows that Lou didn't start it. He's just protecting himself. And so in some aspects that helps him out. Another aspect is he's friends with a Charleston detective, and sometimes Blue works with the police department, and sometimes his friend helps him out. There is a high-priced lawyer involved, but for when things go really bad. But for the most part, if things are on camera, then it's pretty cut and dry in a lot of cases. So I like to keep things where it's sort of more cut and dry. And it's a book, so that sometimes there is some luck involved. But fortunately, in this day and age, you know, there are cameras everywhere.
We hope so, but sometimes I don't exactly. You know, I look at the videos on the news sometimes, and I'm saying, how could you not see this guy? How do you not know who he is when you could see his face and they don't catch him anyway? That
yep.
drives me crazy. That drives me crazy, absolutely crazy. So tell us about Maureen and why Mick never got over it, and then he falls for Colette. So are you ever going to give this poor guy a permanent interest? Because he likes Harmony, to tell you the truth, but that's not going to happen.
So Maureen was his mixed girlfriend in
yeah.
the second book in the series, Bad Time to Be In It, and she ends up being the victim of a kidnapping. And the reason that the kidnapper took Maureen is to get back at Mick and Blue. And Mick doesn't really forgive himself for the fact that that's the reason she was taken and was abused. And so that was hard. That was a hard pill for him to swallow, especially when they rescue her and she doesn't want anything to do with him after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
He's reeling from that. And, you know, he also recognizes that he's still probably not a good fit for Colette. He's got major addiction issues that at some point, he's a functioning addict right now, but that's only going to work for so long. And, he's about at the end of his rope on that. So we'll just have to see what happens with him, but he's got to do some self-straightening out, I think, before he can be at that point in his life.
He sounds like he used some rehabilitation or counseling or something. Seriously.
Yep.
I know. It's so in this day and age, people escape by drinking or taking drugs. And me, I drink coffee. That's it. That's my choice. Caffeine. And yeah,
yep.
I don't drink.
Love
I don't drink ever. You should see how many. four or five Javalia Columbia coffee. It's delicious and it works. Let me tell you, it makes you feel better. So
yep.
How does this affect Blue and his security? And when Mick is not around to do the heavy strong-arming, what happens then? How does he deal with it? How does Blue deal with it? Because it gets kind of dangerous if Mick's not around. So who takes his place? Or does he have to figure it out?
In the first book in the series, In It for the Money, It opens with Blue, and he's just about to lose his business. Mick has gone off on a sabbatical for a couple of years, and Blue's business has slowly trickled down to nothing. And so that's how Blue used to manage his business when Chrome would leave. It was poorly, and he realized that he can't keep doing that. So he's figured out how to run the business without Chrome, and then also how to manage Chrome such that there's not a lawsuit because he's gone too far with somebody else hurting them or something. But Brack Pelton plays a big part in the first book in getting Blue's agency righted once Blue actually gets a job. But Blue has come to learn how to manage himself and his business, but it was a long, tough row for him to hoe to get to that point. And his daughter helps from the business side of it, but Blue has stepped up his game as far as being a heavy hitter, and when there are characters like Brack around, they also help out. So Mick is a vital part of the agency, but Blue could survive from the business aspect without him, although Chrome is more than just a business partner. He's also a friend. So when he's gone, Blue doesn't have somebody close like that.
I know, and somebody to confide in. So tell us about his Pirate's Cove and who runs it, because that's another that was in the other books a little bit more than this one.
So that's Brack Pelton's bar, and the first book I ever wrote called Southern Heat. Brack's uncle owns the bar and is running it, and he gets killed, and Brack inherits the bar and solves his uncle's murder. And so this is a beach bar. When I lived in Charleston, I loved being at the beach, and think about any typical one of the beach bars down there, and I tried to get the scene right, although the Pirate's Cove is a made-up place. So Brack Pelton runs it, and I say runs with quotation marks. He's actually got a very savvy business manager who runs the business, and Brack is the face of the business. But I love the bar. One of my first trips to Charleston, I was overlooking the Atlantic Ocean, sitting at a top deck of this bar and just having a drink and looking at the ocean, and I realized that's when I realized I wanted to live there. So fortunately for me, it happened. And I lived in Charleston for 5 years. And so I wrote the Pirate's Cove in as just to honor the fact that that's what convinced me to move to Charleston, was being able to look at the ocean every day, and just the power and the mystique of the ocean to me is very powerful. So the Pirate's Cove is a central point in the book because it was so important to me and a transitional spot for me in my own life.
That is good, because it means something. It's not just writing something. It's actually something with a meaning for it that makes it even better. That makes it even more credible. So how do you coordinate? You know, I read too many books, they tell me. I mean, I'm reading like 5 this week, and they're all different. And sometimes you get the setting of some of these books, and I go like, I don't care that the trees are moving, and I don't care that it's raining, and I don't care about that. And then sometimes we did a show on setting last month where the setting of the story really adds to it. So how do you coordinate all of these settings? And everybody knows where everybody is, and yet you keep reader interest. How do you do that? Because a lot of authors, like I said, put me to sleep after the first page sometimes.
Well, all except for one of my books is set in Charleston. The characters may go to another city and visit, but they're all pretty much set in Charleston. Because I lived there for an extended period of time, I got to know the city pretty well. And I love setting my books there. And I try to write into my books the feeling and the senses that I experienced when I lived there. So to me, Charleston is an important part of my Blue Caraway series and my Brack Pelton series.
That's amazing, because when there's too many settings, it gets confusing, which is too much.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I tried to. So when they would leave to go to another city, it was really an information run, or they had to go meet somebody or something. But Charleston is the main setting for the book, and it's just because I love the city so much that I'm just going to continue to set my books there.
We haven't lived until you've read books with a 20, one or two of them that I've read recently had 20 settings and about 50 characters. And the only thing that saved me, and I got it right, is that the person wrote a character thing at the beginning telling me who everybody was and where they came from. But sometimes too many characters can really distract from the plot. And when you have like 10 or 20 settings, and I have to take my, as an educator, as a reading specialist, that's probably what saves me from all of this. I take my graphic organizer out and I go like, okay, let's take these settings and wait where they are, because sometimes it gets a little bit too much. So tell us about a drop about this guy Teller and Ariel's security. So she's not going to keep this guy at all, I would think.
So he was responsible for Ariel's security in the beginning of the book, and he's the one who basically set her up to be murdered. And you realize at some point in the book what his motive truly is, which is of course money, and being involved in a financial venture where Ariel was in the way. And so that to me and Blue recognizes that if you're paid to protect somebody and you end up turning on them, that you're really lower than dirt. And so that kind of puts a bullseye on this Jack Teller as far as Blue Caraway is concerned, because it wasn't right, and it doesn't do the business of private security any favors when the person you're paying to and trusting in turns on you. And so hopefully I did the scene justice and people get what they deserve in the book. And I guess I'll let the readers decide that. But Jack Teller is not a good person. And but fortunately, Ariel gets involved with Blue Caraway investigations. And it ended up being very good for her and Blue.
This is true. So the ending really got me, and I was worried about Tess. Why does she take that extra mile and risk her life? Seriously. I mean, they didn't want her to do it, but she did it anyway, because she's like Carmody. She's impulsive. Why did she do that? And I got worried, because I said, you can't kill off Tess. No, really.
So Tess loves Blue, and
I know.
But she also loves the story. And this is a huge story. She realizes on the back end of this, if things are resolved, she's got a huge story on her hands. And so she's willing to put in the work and take the risks to get the story. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, she's also helping Blue out. And so it's a double win for her. And the negative is, the positive outweighed the negative as far as she was concerned. There was physical danger, but the positive was she was doing it for the story, and she was doing it for Blue. So that's how Tess is strong in her own way, and she's very she's very headstrong in a different way than Harmony is. And so so Tess is very cerebral, I guess would be a way to describe it. She thinks a lot about what she's doing, and she's a very good strategist. Whereas Harmony is more of a seat of her pants, but she's got she's got enough attributes of her that it always seems to work out in her favor. Tess is more methodical, but when she recognizes that, you know, sometimes the payoff is worth the risk, and in this case, hopefully it was. So yeah. She's an important part of the book, and so I'm not ready to let her go. She's
can't.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about what we have about 5 minutes. What about Mick? Mick, at the end of the book, we have a very unusual ending. He's going to stay away for a while, right? But he's going to come back in the next one, I hope.
So all the characters that make it through this book are going to come back for the next book in one way, shape, or form. And Mick is at the end of Caught Up In It, this book that just released this Tuesday that we're talking about today. He's kind of his addiction's catching up with him. Everything that's happened to him is catching up with him. And so chances are he's going to have to go and heal up or drown himself, one of the two. And you don't
mm-hmm.
really know what's going to happen, but you know he's probably leaving. And it makes for an interesting story for the next book as to what happens with him. And I'm really intrigued as to how all that's going to play out in the next book. But yeah, Mick is a strong character, but he's got some things that he's got to work on, and that's kind of where he is at this point in his life.
So when is the next book coming out? Because that's what everybody wants to know.
So yeah, I want to know that too. I'm looking for a 2018 or a 2020 release on that. As the information comes in, I'll post it. But yeah, I'm in the middle of the fourth book now, and I'm having a ball writing it.
Well, that is great. And where can everybody learn more about you and your work? And like I said, there are like five people that asked me for this book, and there's one that's going to get it in about a half an hour. And everybody else, if you want the book, go on Amazon and get it yourself. No, I'm serious. So where can everybody find out more about you and your work and both series? And how come I only read one Braxton book?
I'm on Facebook and Twitter, and my website is davidburnsworthbooks.com. And you mentioned my publicist, Ro Karen, and she helps me take care of all of these things, and so I don't drop things and forget things. So without her, I couldn't get everything done that I managed to get done. So she plays a pivotal role in that. But again, davidburnsworthbooks.com, and I'm also on Facebook as David Burnsworth Author, and I'm also on Twitter.
Well, you're everywhere, and for those people that don't know, the link to the show is out, and I'm going to put the buy link for the show, for your book is also on my Facebook wall so that everybody knows where to buy it. It's right there on Amazon. My book review is there, so if you haven't read it, what are you waiting for? Seriously. It's one of my favorite books of the year. I think I put your book in when I said, you know, the best books of the week or whatever. I do that because I'm just reviews, people, and I can do what I want. It's just like Kirkus Reviews. Well, I'm just reviews, so I'm allowed to say a book is great or outstanding or something like that. So everybody knows come November and December, Just Reviews decides on the 15 books of the best books of the year, and this book's looking great. So, David, I want to thank you so very much. I hope it's sunny where you are because it's beautiful here. It's cold, but it's beautiful.
Oh, it's gorgeous here. And Fran, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for everything that you do for authors. It's very well appreciated. You do so much. You give so much to us, and we really appreciate it. And thank you very much.
You're very welcome. It's my pleasure. I enjoy doing this. I retired from teaching when my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And my sister, before she died, convinced me that I could actually do this. So the very first book I reviewed was a cookbook, and I don't cook ever. I don't even know what to do with a stove. And they're still laughing at what I did because it was hilarious. So I will continue to do this as long as everybody wants me to and sends me their books. So everybody, have a great day. It's beautiful outside. Thank you, David. Everybody have a great day, and bye.
Bye-bye.